translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further inquired, out of many types of meditation, which is required for all living entities. Purport. Sri Ramananda Rai replied, the chief duty of every living entity is to meditate upon the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-14 states, Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan satatvam pati shrotavyah kitavyascha dehya pujiyascha nityada. Sut Goswami replied to the sages, headed by Shonaka, everyone should very attentively listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should glorify His activities and meditate upon Him regularly. The translation once again, kindly repeat. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
further inquired.
Out of many types of meditation,
which is required for all living entities.
Om Agyanta Mirandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshuran Miritam Yaira Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Vastarya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Charu Swami Niti Namine. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Vastarya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Parsyastarishitane. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasati Gauravardhanina. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Chakalpatrupasya Nipasindubhayavcha Atitanam Bhavadevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha.
In devotees, I seek blessings and mercy of all the assembled and unassembled Vaishnavas today and all the eternal days to come. For you are all just like desire trees, and you're indeed full of compassion for the fallen souls such as moi. So I need your blessings so that I can say a few words. Indeed, this is such an amazing part of the season. And so in this 8th chapter of the Madhya Leela, Very sweet description is given of after visiting the temple of Jiyad Nishinga. Lord Chaitanya went to the banks of the river Godavari to a place known as Vidyanagar. Vidyanagar is actually a very famous name for places. Nagar, Vidyanagar. Every state in Gujarat probably has a town called Vidyanagar and Gujarati. Sorry, every state in India. So Vidyanagar is a city in Gujarat. So every state, everywhere, there would be a Vidyanagar. So anyway, when Sriman Rai Ramananda went there to take his bath, Godavari, Lord Chaitanya, and he met. And what a meeting that was! Incredible meeting. Can you imagine such an encounter? Now, after introducing himself, the Rai Ramananda introduced, and the Rai requested Lord Chaitanya to remain in this village of Vidyanagar, auspicious name, for some days. So, honoring his request, Lord Chaitanya naturally stayed there in the home of various Brahmanas, Vedic Brahmanas. Names are not given. But the Lord, being a sannyasi, would stay at different homes of different Brahmanas. That's one of the tempting natures of being a sannyasi. You can always have a different house on different days, isn't it? Of course, back then it was different trees even. But trees are comfortable as well, isn't it, underneath trees? So in the evenings of their meeting of each other, the Rai Ramananda would come to see Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and the Rai would be clothed in ordinary dress. Interesting. After the Lord respectfully paid the Lord respectful obeisance, and I get a garland finally. Lord Chaitanya questions him, as we know, and on the object and process of the verse, all these verses from the Vedic literature. First of all, the Rai Ramananda enunciated the system of the Varna Ashram institution. He recites various verses and stating that everything should be dedicated to the Lord. He then spoke of detached action. He speaks of detached action, knowledge mixed with devotional service. And finally, the Rai Ramananda spontaneously speaks on loving service to the Lord. After hearing Ramananda Rai recite some verses, Lord Chaitanya accepted the principle of pure devotional service, devoid of all kinds of speculation. And then the Lord asked the great Ramananda Rai to explain higher platform of devotional service. The Lord, naturally so very much affected and ecstatic in that mood, continuously said, and then you're so very eager, just like one of you, so very eager, you're all wide awake. And that's one of my objectives, to make sure that you remain wide awake. So, Ramananda Rai, and hence the drama, Ramananda Rai explains unalloyed devotional service, love of Godhead, and serving the Lord in the mood of pure servitude, fraternity and fraternal love. Finally, he spoke of serving the Lord in conjugal, naturally, Maturya. He then spoke of how conjugal love can be developed in various ways. This conjugal love attains its highest perfection, in Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna. Naturally, guys, if you didn't know that, then you wouldn't be sitting in this temple. He next describes the position of Srimati Radharani and the transcendental mellows of love of God. Incidentally, I'm just going through the summary of the chapter, and each chapter has a summary at the beginning. Because we've gone through, quite into the chapter, this is over 200 verses, so let's just give a quick summary. Ramananda Rai then recited a verse from his own concerning the platform of ecstatic vision, technically called Prema Vilas Vivarta. Ramananda Rai also explained that all stages of conjugal love can be attained through the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan, especially by the mercy of the Gopis. Now all these subject matters were vividly described. Gradually, the powerful great Ramananda could understand the position of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Of course, and when Gauranga Mahaprabhu exhibited the real form, his real form, the right Ramananda fell unconscious. He just fell unconscious. And after some days, Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Rai to retire. He wanted him to retire from the government service. He had a powerful service, very, very, you know, full of responsibility. And of course, retire from that government service and come to Jagannath Puri. And of course, the descriptions of the meetings between the two are taken from the notebook of none other than Sarabdhamadhar Goswami. If the great Goswami Sarabdhamadhar had not written these notes, can you imagine where we would all be? We wouldn't have anything much. Those notes are so exceptionally important to us. Srila Prabhupada, in these verses, simply gives us a Bhagavatam verse during these particular verses. He gives us a Bhagavatam verse, Prabhupada, and he gives us a little purport. And here, in this particular verse of 253, Srila Prabhupada gives a purport and gives us the verse from the first canto, second chapter, the 14th verse, a very popular verse. It's one of my favorites. Why? Because many years ago, on a Sunday morning, I was giving a little talk to the car park team in the library. I still refer as the library. It's Bhakti Central, of course, but it's the library. So I was sitting in there, and all of a sudden, Krishna Priya Prabhu appears. Now, when Krishna Priya Prabhu appears, it's like the entire Bhagavatam comes with it. So he just pulls the first canto out. Of course, I'm in the middle of this discourse. He stops the discourse, which is a good thing, and he says, "You've got to all learn this verse." And this was the verse 1-14. So it's been in my memory since then. And of course, you know, Krishna Priya Prabhu is such an amazing scholar. When his two daughters, his two illustrious daughters, were children, literally toddlers, they were taught the entire Bhagavad Gita. And the elder daughter, Bharati, knew the entire 700 verses at one point, one chapter at a time. Can you imagine that? Such was the teaching. Of course, at that time, I was feeling somewhat envious. Like, how come I can't even remember one blinking verse? And these children are reciting so many verses. But anyway, so whenever I go through and I come across this verse, I remember him in particular. And Bhatihi, because he was emphasizing, I still remember all these years back, he was emphasizing the word Bhatihi. Bhatihi means protector. And there's only one protector. And that can only be the supreme, the Purusha. Patnihi means protected. Of course, in the day and age which we live in, Prabhus, I kid you not, it's the Patni which protects the Patni. Seriously. All husbands would agree. I certainly do. So the verse, I just wanted to read the translation of 1-14, and of course the purport, because that's what's been given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And the translation is, therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector Who is the protector of the devotee? And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives a nice little beautiful purport. In realization of the absolute truth is the ultimate aim of life. If realization of the absolute truth is the ultimate aim of life, it must be carried out by all means. In any case of the above mentioned castes and orders of life, the four processes, and this is intriguing, the four processes, namely glorifying, hearing, remembering, and worshipping, the four are general occupations. General occupations. Without these principles of life, Prabhupada mentions these four are the principles of life, no one can exist. Wow. Activities of the living being involve engagements in these four different principles of life, especially in modern society. All activities are more or less dependent on hearing and glorifying. Any man from any social status becomes well-known man in human society within a very short time if he is simply glorified truly or falsely in the daily newspapers. Sometimes political leaders of a particular party are also advertised by newspaper propaganda. And by such a method of glorification, an insignificant man becomes an important man within no time. True. But such propaganda by false glorification of an unqualified person cannot bring about any good, either for the particular man or for society. There may be some temporary reactions to such propaganda, but there are no permanent effects. Therefore, such activities are a waste of time. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifested before us, who has created everything manifested before us. We have broadly discussed this fact from the beginning of the Janmadi Asya Shloka of this Bhagavatam. The tendency to glorify others or hear others must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being. And that will bring happiness. So in essence, there's the conclusion of how to attain happiness. So once again, just to reiterate, it's stated here that the four principles of life, glorification, hearing, remembering, worshipping the Lord, and what truly resonates with that are the nine processes of devotional service, the nine processes of bhakti, and which is very importantly given to us in the seventh canto by none other than Pranayat Maharaj. This is in the fifth chapter, 23rd and 24th verse. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. In 24, which fortunately for me wasn't recited yesterday, Iti Pumshar Pita Vishnu Bhaktis Jainava Lakshana Kriyata Bhagavati Adha Tanmane Tanmane Ditam Uttaram Uttaram. So Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia and pastimes of the Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming His servant, considering the Lord everything unto Him. Considering the Lord one's best friend and surrendering everything unto Him. In other words, serving Him with the body, with the mind, and the words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service of Krishna. Devotional service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person. So one who worships the Lord through these nine processes is the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. And hence in the Bhagavatam, the best example is that of Maharaj Ambarish. He was serving the Lord with all nine. Shravanam is the hearing. Hearing is so very important, naturally. Kirtanam, chanting. And Smaranam, remembering. Through the hearing and chanting, one remembers. Pada Sevanam, thinking of the Lord's lotus feet. Pada means the feet. And Sevanam means worshipping as well. Here is thinking. Archanam naturally is the worship. And Vandanam comes. Vandanam. Vandanam is such a beautiful Sanskrit word, isn't it? Vandanam, offering prayers. Dasyam, serving the Lord as a servant. Dasya. Sakyam, Sakhi, is the friendship to the Lord and serving Him as a friend. And of course, Atma Nivedanam. So when I take darshan of Atma Nivedanam Swami, I tend to remember all these. Self-surrender. So this is what's been given to us by Prahlad Maharaj. And in essence, Prabhu's, if we are somewhat bereft of this, if we are somewhat bereft of these four principles which have just been given to us, it can be very, very difficult to live. For these four principles, in accordance to what Srila Prabhupada is mentioning, are the principles of life. Of course, there are many other principles as well, but Prabhupada is truly emphasizing this. And it becomes truly difficult to live. It becomes unbearable. It's like when a fish is in water, when the fish is brought up, it's not going to survive. Isn't it that wonderful, well-known analogy? And a few months back, I was sent a text message by Kaveri Prabhu. Kaveri Prabhu, if you've received any messages from him, initially when he was very fired up, there were quite a few messages coming through, and then I was thinking to myself, well, not another one. You know, it gets like that, doesn't it? Not another one. Oh, it's only Kaveri. I don't want to open this message. But anyway, this one he sent. Incidentally, Kaveri Prabhu, you're probably missing him. I certainly am. He's generally positioned at the top of the gate, but hasn't been in that position for several weeks, if not months. He has severe dementia, so he's really just at home now. He can't. Now, as you can imagine, Kaveri Prabhu being in one place, in a room, confined, you know, that's just not him. He's always out and about. He's been driving since, you know, God knows when. But he's got severe dementia. But he sent me this this poem. I'm not quite sure where it's from, but it truly reminded me, and I just wanted to share it with everyone. It's entitled "The Water Rises." The water. So I was just contemplating that. If we were bereft from these four principles, you know, glorification, hearing, etc. If we're bereft, then this is the condition when the water rises. The water rises, meaning that our time is limited. And you know, as you all know, Prabhus, I'm very accustomed to going to the crematorium. Hospitals and crematoriums are wonderful places, because hospitals, you tend to embrace being soon departing. Whether it's 10 years from now, or 10 months from now, or 10 days from now, Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu briefly mentioned yesterday that Pariksit Maharaj, you know, he was fortunate he had 7 days' notice. We don't. We just don't. So anyway, this is a very interesting poem. The water rises, my feet are cold. And as they turn into watery blue, and it is an uncomfortable numb, I have lost all feeling. I waited too long, and now it is impossible to run. For without the feet, how far can you run? The water rises, and it is now up to my shaking, knocking, bony knees. Shaking, knocking, bony knees. I ask the water to release me. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopalananda ki jai. Sita Rao Lakshmi Hanuman ki jai. Govindan Bhagwan ki jai. Jagat Guru Prabhupada ki jai. I ask the water to release me. I ask with desperation. And arriving in ever-rising shivering pleas. It's arriving in ever-rising shivering pleas, but the water doesn't listen and decides to rise above my waist. I no longer feel my legs beneath, and I'm now just panicking. So one who is not familiar with these four principles panics. Believe you me, Gurus, I've seen personalities panic when in that position. Standing in this murky water, totally encased, the water rises, and it's now surging against my chest. My heart pumps out a little heat. My heart pumps out a little heat, but it won't last much. The heart's not going to last much longer. I am now waiting for the impending cardiac arrest. I now wait for the impending cardiac arrest. A tightness forms, and a sudden sharpness of ice. Cold breath, a sudden sharpness of ice cold breath because the water's rising. I cannot move, and I'm thinking, what a pathetic way to meet my end. Of course, it's speedier death, but I prefer the word end. The water rises, Prabhus, the water rises, and I'm seeing the water and feeling it bounce off my bearded chin. Of course, if you're a lady, you wouldn't have a bearded chin, but men would. And in that state, you're not probably shaved. So it's a bearded chin bouncing. How am I still alive? And I now cannot feel a single limb, for everything is sinking. I'm chained to the ground, and I'm alone in what will soon be my watery grave. No one is coming, even though they may be there, but no one's really coming, and no one is looking. So I guess I am not going to be saved. Do I give up? The water rises, It's not stopping. And my head is now tilted back, right back. Head is tilted. I feel the water seeping into me. I feel the water seep into me. And it's now oxygen. I'm starting to lack. I lack oxygen, can't breathe. Drowning. The water fills my lungs and my heart starts to explode. My eyes are wide open and my last thought is I'm now going to leave with all the water I have swallowed. Because you can only swallow the water. I'm now submerged and my hand is the last and only thing seen. I wave goodbye to this life and all the things I have once been. Goodbye. And the hand slowly is sinking, for the water continues rising. When the heart explodes from this coldness experienced by the body, but when the heart explodes, the physical body, according to the Bible, reaches 107 degrees Celsius. And at that time, distillation. We merge out. The subtle body is what we're in. We're no longer in the gross, but we're still connected to the gross, because the water hasn't finished its business. Eventually, when that moment appears of the physical gross body reaching that temperature of 107, there is a disconnection. Eventually, the subtle umbilical cord is there connecting the two bodies. And then the subtle body is allowed, in which we are in, is allowed to then drift wherever it may go. And for me, it will probably, I'll end up in the further, not the celestial, but the subterranean regions. Unless all of you pray for me intensely, for my water will continue to rise further and further. Gauranga Mahaprabhu says to Lord Nityananda, he mentions to Lord Nityananda, the ornaments you wear represents the nine processes of bhakti. The ornaments which you wear represents the nine processes of bhakti. Mahaprabhu is saying this to Lord Nityananda. For Lord Nityananda on one occasion is desperately wanting to be with Mahaprabhu. And of course we know that during the Chaturmas every year, you know, the devotees make the journey from Nadia, from Mayapur, from Mayapur to Puri. And they make that journey. Shivananda Sen, he is the chief, and he takes everyone, as we know. But Gauranga Mahaprabhu was in separation of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda momentarily excuses himself from somewhat serving Mother Sachi, and he mentions to the mother, I'm not going to be long, I'm just going to pop over to Puri and back. You won't miss me. Fair enough. Do what you want. Because she knows this is the Avadhuta. He's going to do what the heck he wants. He'll go wherever he wants. He's fully, completely independent. So anyway, he leaves and he rushes through the forestry. And he goes straight to Puri. And the outskirts of Puri, then they meet. And a humongous glorification of Lord Nityananda is experienced, and Gauranga Mahaprabhu is glorifying the Lord, and this is the statement he comes up with, and the ornaments you wear represent these nine processes of bhakti. Now if one fails to adhere to our four principles of life, these four principles which I again refer to, then we are certainly doomed. And in relation to the glorification of the Lord's pastime, in relation to it, one of my favorite verses from the Gita is on in the fourth chapter of the ninth verse, a very famous verse which truly stipulates the necessity of remembering and glorifying the pastimes of the Lord, which is what we're really meant to be doing. Janma karma chame divyam evam yor iti tatvatah vatta deham punar punar janma punar janma naitimam iti so rajum. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance, the Lord says, and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, Arjuna, but attains my eternal abode. So, Prabhus, if we want to cease the water from rising, if we want to turn the tap off, it is possible. For how? Via the glorification of the Lord. And we know that, you know, true liberation, because they're the four pillars of life, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Moksha is the fourth pillar. And generally we give this speech when a couple is underneath the mandap. It's a typical speech which Shukadama Prabhu would give. And I do the same. And I talk about these four principles, four pillars. And for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the moksha, liberation, means, you know, Hari Kirtan, Hari Bhajan, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, and so if we were to continuously do that, for instance, yesterday, you know, Vrindavan Chandra, who I refer to again, gives this beautiful pastime of when Srila Prabhupada was observed by Sachidananda Maharaj. He is chanting, isn't he? Even in his sleep. And it reminded me of when I used to go in the ashram upstairs. And have any one of you disturbed Acharya Seva Prabhu? He would stay, of course he no longer stays there, but he would stay in this cubby hole upstairs in the Brahmachari ashram. Some of the this side of the room would know. And you go into that cubby hole. Of course, you know, I had the opportunity, but reluctantly now and again to disturb him, because I may need keys or I may need something, and he's always got everything. So on numerous occasions, you know, disturb, and he's just chanting. He just, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, he's just chanting. And I thought, wow, amazing. You know, if it was me, I'd be probably saying something completely different. What the heck are you disturbing me for? You know, I'd say something like that. But he's chanting. So for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, naturally, the only liberation is the chanting of the holy name. And the glorification and remembering the pastimes of the Lord, so very important for us to remember these pastimes. And for me, pastimes are exceptionally important. Why? Because it forces my mind to be engaged in the Leela of the Lord. And as it is a challenge, I kid you not, it is a challenge to remember. Because as we all know, we read something and we blinking forget it immediately. My mind and memory is like a sieve. Now, remember when my spiritual master was examining me many moons ago, he tested me at the house in the front living room of Shukadama Prabhu's mother's house. And I was to get Brahman initiation. It was 1995, And he said to me, Nila Madhava, your memory and mind, I don't think you have a mind. You can't remember anything. You're useless. Of course, Shruti Prabhu saves me. His personality is like that. You need to pull you out of the water which is rising. And due to Shruti Narayan Prabhu's mercy, he said to the spiritual master, he said, he does need Brahman. But he can't remember a verse. He can't remember anything. How am I going to give him Brahman? And he says, well, you know, does he need to go on the altar? Does this young brahmachari need to go on the altar? Well, no, he doesn't go on the altar, Maharaj, but he does funerals for the community. And the community do ask him now and again that, you know, are you a brahmana? A good excuse. So, of course, to remember the pastimes is also a challenge. And the pastimes which we tend to remember and we repeat again and again and again, and that's the only way to remember, because otherwise, you know, I won't remember. So once again I repeat another pastime, and this is one of my favorites, and it's from the Chaitanya Manga, and I love the Chaitanya Manga, compiled by Lokshindas Thakur at the age of 17. Can you imagine? Is anyone 17 here? Of course, Maharaj Prabhu looks like 17, but he's 23. He's 20. He's not 17. But Shyam, how old are you?
20.
Younger than Shyam. I mean, Shyam looks like a 15-year-old boy. But Lord Chaitanya Thakur, at the age of 17, compiles the Chaitanya Mangal, and when the Thakur Vrindavandas, the powerful Vrindavandas Thakur, when he sees this beautiful compilation, because he had also compiled the Bhagavad at that time and he had named it the Chaitanya Manga. And he comes across this amazing literature and he is so attracted to it, and he mentions that, look, you know, if a 17-year-old boy can write like this, I'm going to renounce my title of Chaitanya Manga. And this should be called the Chaitanya Mangal, and I'll call by the Chaitanya Bhagavad. So in the Chaitanya Mangal, there's this beautiful, beautiful pastime which I adore and love. It begins, this is in the introduction part of it. It begins by saying, by a description given of when Krishna comes and enters Dwarka for the final time. Now the Lord has this habit. The Lord has a habit to leave Dwarka and enter Hastinapur. Why he goes to Hastinapur? Because he's so very attached to the five Pandavas and Draupadi. And of course, you know, the queens of Dwarka are always wondering that it seems like the Lord loves them more than he loves us, for he's always away. And he then finally enters Dwarka seemingly for the last time after some 125 odd years. And he immediately enters the palace of Rukmini. Now, on normal occasions, the Lord would enter the palace of Satyabhama first. She's queen number four. So one might think that, why is the Lord always going to Satyabhama's? However, the Lord does that because he is completely under the control of that queen, Satyabhama. The Lord is henpecked. Now, Prabhus, if you think that the Lord cannot be henpecked, he can. He can be henpecked. He's completely under the control of this powerful Maharani, for she controls him and everything. And so, naturally, when he comes, he wants to appease her. Because otherwise, he'll get the sauce. And he does time and time again. Of course, he relishes it. I wouldn't, but he does. When I get the sauce, I don't relish it at all. So, but on this occasion, Prabhus, he enters Rukmini's palace. And Rukmini Maharani is in absolute turmoil. She's literally wailing. And he mentions, what's the problem?
Has the mother-in-law been, you know, heavy on you? Has she chastised you? And there are three mother-in-laws present. I mean, can you imagine having one? Can you imagine having one is pretty bad enough, but there's three in Dwarka. Have the mother-in-laws been, you know, unkind to you? Have the children been naughty? And there are many, many children. There are children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren. Towards the end of, you know, Dwarka pastimes, there are trillions upon trillions, Prabhupada mentions. It's mentioned that 38.2 million teachers are educating the children. So you can imagine how much, you know, Rukmini has to deal with. So the Lord asks, you know, what's the problem? Why are you crying? And she mentions, well, I know that this is the last time you're going to be here. For you are about to wind up this pastime of yours. And what will happen to me? What will happen to the children? Of course, outside, through the window, there's Narad Muni looking in. I don't know, you might see him out there. Some of you may, if you have the vision. I certainly will never see him. But Narad Muni is looking through, and he's looking through. And as soon as the Lord sees the Guru, the Lord goes outside the palace and brings him in. For he's elated because the Guru has appeared. And he's put on the throne of the Lord. And both the Lord and Rukmini both rush with the many maidservants. They rush and they begin to, you know, worship the Guru with water and they're washing the feet. But the Sevanam. They're washing the Guru's feet, and the Guru is despondent, depressed, dejected. And the Lord is wondering, because can you imagine Narad Muni being despondent and dejected? It's unheard of. For he's always constantly chanting the Lord's glories. But in this occasion, he's similar to Rukmini. So the Lord asks the Guru, why are you, you know, depressed? I can imagine the missus being depressed, but why are the Guru's depressed? And Narad, he then explains, I'm afraid you're about to wind up your pastimes here in this universe. For the kalpa, you will come after another kalpa. You will come after another 8.6 billion years. To the conditioned living entities, that's, you know, part-time memorial. Can you imagine 8.64 billion years? You know, it's like, it's only one day, incidentally. It's only one day. And what will happen to the praja? What will happen to the populace? What will happen to everyone on this planet and universe in your absence? That is why I am despondent. So the Lord then immediately turns to Rukmini. See, you're thinking of yourself, but the Guru thinks of the entire population of the entire universe. The Lord then mentions to Narad Muni that, look, if you go to Jagannath Puri, and you take darshan of Lord Jagannath, and you ask Lord Jagannath, who's been to Puri? I'm sure all of you have probably been to Puri, of course, all of you. Been many a times. If you go to Jagannath Puri and you petition Jagannath, you plea, then I possibly may remain. So if Jagannath desires, then I will remain. So the Guru, Narad, he's thinking, there's a glimmer of hope. So he's about to leave the palace, he's about to leave, and the Lord says, well, you know, do come back and tell me what Jagannath has said. I'll wait for you in the meantime. And immediately, Narad Muni, because, you know, Narad Muni can travel the speed of mind, if not faster. The speed of mind, if not faster. Of course, I can't imagine anything being faster than the speed of mind. So immediately, he goes to Puri, and he takes darshan of Lord Jagannath, and Lord Jagannath is thinking, okay, what does this guy want? And he says to the Lord, well, you know, Krishna is here. You are here. Is there any way that you will remain? And Jagannath says, look, you know, I may be the Lord of the universe. I may be Jagannath. But, you know, the Lord, Krishna has his own will as well. You're going to have to go to Svetadvipa and ask him there. So now Narada is thinking, well, I'm in Puri now. Now I have to go to Svetadvipa. You know, what's going on? So anyway, Narada didn't want to waste any time because time is ticking. Time is of the essence and my time ticks as well. Immediately, Narada enters Svetadvipa. As he enters the Svetadvipa, he is puzzled and somewhat confused because on one side of him are the queens of Dwarka, all the queens of Dwarka, and on the other side of him are all the gopis of Vraj, and they're all somewhat lining up, and they're lining up to an altar which is at a distance, which is a nice Singarshan. And we have such a beautiful Singarshan, don't we? And all these personalities are going on the altar and are about to worship the personalities who's on the altar. Narada couldn't quite figure out who is this personality who's being worshipped. And as he gets closer, this person signals to him like this, come nearer, because this is what generally do in this way if you want to, someone to come nearer. So come nearer. And Narada comes near. He still can't figure out. This ain't Krishna. This ain't Krishna. What the heck is it? He's trying to. Eventually, he then understands who this personality is. This personality asks Narada Muni, so who are you? And where are you from? Oh, I'm Narada Muni. I'm from the Chaturvyuha, the four-headed Brahma universe. Where Lord Brahma has four heads. I'm from the four-dimensional universe. Oh, this is such an insignificant place. It's the smallest. So anyway, what do you want? And Narada says, well, Krishna is there at present. It's coming to the end of Dwapara Yuga. In that universe, Kali is about to manifest. And already the symptoms of Kali Yuga are there. So what I'm requesting is that Krishna remains there. And I've been told by Lord Jagannath to come here and you can make it happen. You can fix it. You can do it. So this personality who's on the throne, who's being worshipped by all these individuals, mentions to Narada, okay, you know, you go, I follow. And Narada Muni says, okay, you're going to come. Yeah, you go immediately. So immediately Narada leaves. And of course, what Krishna has done is somehow he has frozen time. For us, it's inconceivable. But Narada then goes straight to Dwarka. And he is jumping in joy. And as he enters the palace of Rukmini, and Rukmini and the Lord are witnessing that the Narada Muni is jumping in joy. So he's got the answer. So Krishna asks that, okay, so what did, you know, Jagannath say? Well, Jagannath told me to go to Svetadvipa, and I met this person, and he said, you're going to remain here in Kali Yuga, throughout Kali Yuga, with any luck. Krishna says, this is in the Chaitanya Mangala, beautifully, you know, explained. Krishna said, yes, I will remain. I will appear in the Kali Yuga, in this Kali Yuga, as Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Yeah. Yeah. And I will remain as the holy name throughout this age. So I thought this was such an important and significant pastime. And I am running out of time, but propose in essence, in conclusion, at the end of the purport of this, in the purport of this verse given to us, 1-14, Srila Prabhupada explains how to bring happiness in our lives simply by glorifying the Lord. One can bring happiness simply by glorifying the Lord. For if one does that, then naturally the water will cease to rise. And I shall now stop here, for I'm sure that your breakfast is getting cold. Any comments and questions? Comments gladly accepted. Questions from which he is here. Thank you, Guru.
Mukunda Mala Stotra, I think it's the third verse, Srila Prabhupada is describing death. And he describes death as being like a rat in the jaws of a cat. And I had the experience once of hearing this very high-pitched, shrill scream, and it sounded a bit like a child screaming, so I ran outside to check to see if there was no child in distress. And it was actually a rat that was captured by a cat, and it was just screeching, almost a human-like sound. Rat was terrified. And in this purport, Prabhupada describes, however, for a devotee, death is like the kitten in the mouth of the cat. The kitten's feeling protection. So I was thinking, we're very fortunate Srila Prabhupada's given us the process how to become kittens of Krishna and how to avoid becoming rats.
Thank you so much. Such a wonderful analogy. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for the class. My question is, when you're in the material world, sometimes, well, specifically I refer to being in London, and it's pretty crazy out there. You mentioned to worship or glorify the Lord. So besides chanting, any other ways to do that on a minute-to-minute basis? If you're just walking down the tube on the bus, on the transport, or just in various situations.
Yeah, very important. Thank you so much. What a beautiful question. All I can think of is when we were in the pandemic, when we were locked down, and in that time, I was very, very envious of the resident devotees. For I could not come here, but I was receiving all these reports how wonderful it was to be inside with everyone. For me, my wife and my son were locked in indoors. So a very good, way of glorifying the Lord is in unison together. If you're in the underground, make sure another devotee is with you. For in the association of devotees, you can glorify and you can continue with being with the Lord. It's so important to be together. We sing together, we eat together, we even sleep in the ashram in one room together. So that association is the key. I like going in the underground, especially dressed in a bed sheet and putting this mark on. On several occasions, I would go in the underground with a massive painting because, I generally attend weddings in the city and the parking, So if you go in the underground with a painting, everyone looks at the painting. So in one sense, that painting was my association. Even without any words, I was glorifying the Lord because it was a devotional painting. And on many occasions, people would ask that, who is this? What is this? So any opportunity. Of course, if you're alone, and many times devotees have to enter a country or a realm or a city where you can't really be a devotee, otherwise you may be persecuted. And it's happened. If you're in that situation, it's pretty intense. But In any situation, there is always the opportunity to glorify the Lord. 24/7. There are devotees who are in their sleep and they're glorifying the Lord. Because that takes a bit of practice, actually. Certainly for me, believe you me, my thoughts are completely and utterly and totally mundane. For they will always be, unless you sincerely pray for me. But, yes, you know, one can do so. And it really, as long as you keep yourself together with devotees, then you're safe. Of course, I want to run away from devotees many a times. You know, if I see a devotee along the corridor, I'll have to turn around. I don't want to speak to this person. I'll turn, especially if it's a woman here. I don't want to speak to woman. I'll turn around and I'll go around the other side. But that's my tendency. For the mind, my mind is such a rascal. But we are being given this opportunity. London, Londinium may be a mundane place, but there are opportunities within London that are exceptionally beautiful and spiritual. If you enter, you know, when you enter the top of the gates here, you drive down Burren Marg and you come to the Goshala, and then there's the Haveli building, and then of course our beautiful shrine, and you will feel in great, great gratitude, for this is a holy place. It's a holy dharma. It's such an important place to be in. And hence, I do envy the resident devotees. Many a times I've thought, maybe I should just buy a property in the village, because it's too expensive. I've said to my wife, we've made a mistake. We should have just purchased a house. Because if there was a lockdown, I would have been a resident. So anyway, Kuruz, thank you. I hope I haven't gone off on a tangent. Was there anything else in addition to that?
Does glorification mean to carry the intention of propagating the name of the Lord?
Yes, of course. Propagating, yeah, absolutely. Glorify the Lord and get others to glorify the Lord. Isn't that amazing? Getting others to glorify the Lord. And by so doing, you can remember the Lord very, very easily. And of course, remembering the Lord is one thing, but remember the devotees of the Lord. Personally, for me, Prabhu, I find it very difficult to remember the Lord. But to remember the devotees of the Lord and the activities of the devotees of the Lord is, for me, a very, very benefiting thing. Not benefiting, but, you know, it's for me very practical. Of course, I don't want to remember a devotee and end up criticizing, which I do, and I do that a lot. But I am somewhat conscious that, okay, even in criticism, isn't it when Kamsa remembers the Lord, you know, when so many of these personalities, when Ravana remembers the Lord, he may be continuously 24/7 criticizing and offending the Lord in that manner. However he is, that individual, Asura, is remembering the Lord. And there's a tremendous benefit. Thank you so much. Grantharaj Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita.